Assemble the votees. Appanaha. Being entangled. Sangshutim. In the hurdle of birth and death. Guram. Too complicated. Yat. What? Nama. The absolute name. Rivashaha. Unconsciously. Grinan. Chanting. Tataha. From that. Sadyaha. At once. Vimucheta. Gets freedom. Yat. That which. Vibeti. Fears. Swayam. Personally. Voyam. Fear itself. As a translation, living entities or living beings who are entangled in the complicated meshes of birth and death can be freed immediately by even unconsciously chanting the holy name of Krishna, which is feared by fear personified. So purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Vasudeva, or Lord Krishna, the Absolute Personality of Godhead, is the supreme controller of everything. There is no one in creation who is not afraid of the rage of the Almighty. Great asuras like Ravan, Aranyakashipu, Kangsa, and others who were very powerful living entities were all killed by the personality of Godhead. And the Almighty Vasudeva has empowered his name with the powers of his personal self. Everything is related to him, and everything has its identity in him. It is stated herein that the name of Krishna is feared even by fear personified. This indicates that the name of Krishna is non-different from Krishna. Therefore, the name of Krishna is so powerful, or is as powerful as Lord Krishna himself. There is no difference at all. Anyone, therefore, can take advantage of the holy names of Lord Sri Krishna even in the midst of greatest dangers. The transcendental name of Krishna, even though uttered unconsciously or by force of circumstances, can help one obtain freedom from the hurdle of birth and death. So, apana sangshatim goram yannama vipashogranan tatasadyo vimucheta yadvi veti swayam vayam. So, omagana timidandasha gananjana shalakaya chakshurun miditam yena tasmai shi gurave namaha. So, what's really being discussed here is a type of chanting known as Nama Bash chanting. There's different types of chanting. There's Nama Bash, there's Nama Parada, and there's the pure chanting, Shuddha Nama. So, maybe you can turn that off because it's going to put everyone to sleep. It's called white noise, isn't it? It puts everyone to sleep. No? Try again.
No, it will take time.
Oh, it runs a cycle. Let's see if you're right. So, no. A few minutes? She's not very submissive. All right. Anyway, so what's being discussed here is Namabhas chanting, and according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, you're right. According to Bhaktivinoda Thakur in the Hari Nam Chintamani, Namabhas chanting has the ability to liberate one. Namabhas chanting means basically like a reflection or a shadow chanting. And that chanting can give one complete liberation from all types of karma. There's different types of karma that are described by Srila Rupa Goswami in the Nectar of Devotion. There's the kuta, there's the bija, and there's the prarabdha karma. So kuta means the inclination, bija means the seed, and then prarabdha means what's manifest. So there's karma that's manifest, it's almost mature, And what happens with this karma, whether it's kuta, bija, or prarabdha, it creates a whole cycle. In other words, let's say you do some sinful activity. So that sinful activity in and of itself creates the inclination and the seed of desire to commit more sinful activity. It's a cycle. It just repeats over and over again. So the chanting of the holy names breaks that cycle. Even accidentally or even jokingly, this is another method of unconscious chanting, accidentally joking, meaning something else, like even dividing the syllables, just like the example given in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, is how sometimes the Muslims, they're being attacked by a boar, and they say, Haram. Mm-hmm. That means how horrible. Mm-hmm. So, Haram. Mm-hmm. Or there's a certain type of hotel chain called Ramada hotel chain. I don't know if you have that here. You have that here? So anyone who goes and stays in that hotel gets liberated. They said, Ramada. Or even, of course, there's the story of Valmiki Muni who chanted Mar, 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 and he got Ram, Ram, Ram. So that gives liberation. Of course, there's an interesting discussion in the Chaitanya Charitamrita between Haridas Thakur and this Gopal Chakravarti about this Namavas liberation. This took place in the Majumdra assembly, that is the assembly of Raghunath Das Goswami's father and uncle, Haranya Govardhan. So there was a discussion. Haridas Thakur said, Namavas liberation, Namavas chanting gives liberation. And this Gopal Chakravarti, who was more intelligent than Haridas Thakur, he said it doesn't give liberation. Actually, I challenge you, and if you are wrong, I'll cut your nose off. Yes, so heavy was his comment. And Haridas Thakur said, if I'm wrong, I'll cut my own nose off. But anyway, so because he had full faith in the potency of the holy name. So what happened with Gopal Chakravarti that shortly after that, first of all, he was kicked out of the assembly for offending a pure devotee, Haridas Thakur. And then shortly after that, he developed leprosy. And when you have leprosy, sometimes your cute little nose falls off. Or it melts off. It doesn't exactly fall off. It goes, it melts. So that was the reaction he got for offending Haridas Thakur and not agreeing with Haridas Thakur as to the efficacy or the potency of Namavas chanting. And another example given in the Bhagavatam of the potency of Namavas chanting is the story of Ajamil. And I think you all know that story. Ajamil was a very good Brahmin. Very good Brahmin boy, raised in a nice family. However, was it Jayato Vishayak Pumsam Sangos Teshu Bajayate? He started meditating upon a lady and a man who were embracing. And Prabhupada says a prostitute and a Shudra who were embracing. And of course, nowadays, it's not politically correct to say this, but Prabhupada said, what you call girlfriends here, we call prostitutes in India. Of course, there are many times like my disciples come up and introduce me to their girlfriend. They said, this is my girlfriend. And Prabhupada said, we don't believe in girlfriends and boyfriends. People should get married. So anyway, that's another subject matter that's politically incorrect. And I wouldn't speak that in public. So, in any case, even they have virtual girlfriends now, isn't it? People who couldn't find someone to love them, they find a avatar on the internet. You understand? Avatar means like, anyway, it's like a cartoon character. And sometimes they're really good, they're really real. And so, wow, better than my real girlfriend on the internet. So the point is, he was watching them embracing, and because he was contemplating the objects of the senses, and this, of course, is very basic information in Krishna consciousness. When you contemplate objects of the senses, you get attached. From attachment comes lust, From lust comes anger, the bewilderment of memory, etc. So he just thought, you know, I have to have this girl. He just saw her as, she has to be mine, she has to be mine. That's love. Material world. That's why we like better the marriages that are arranged. Because sometimes the love marriages are not actually based on compatibility, right? But sometimes they work. Anyway, Krishna had a love marriage with Rukmini. That was a love marriage. He just kidnapped her. So we're not against that. However, sometimes when one falls in love, it's basically trying to enjoy the other person, the falling in love business. So he became attached to her, meditated on her, and finally he took her in the house as a servant, and then finally he had illicit relationship with her, gave up his good wife, mistreated his father, you know, practically killed his father, not directly, but by neglect of his father. And he was so attached to material enjoyment that he was still having children when he was like 86 years old. That's the point. Material enjoyment doesn't go away with age. It's not that you get older and necessarily wiser. Sometimes you get older and more foolish. Material enjoyment goes away with the chanting of the holy names when one is attached to spiritual enjoyment. We were talking about this last night, that if you're absorbed in your real internal life or your service to Krishna, there's two stages, Prabhupada said. We mentioned that last night. First of all, you become absorbed in your service. And then in a higher stage, you become absorbed in your internal life or relationship with Krishna. So that's why everyone should have a service. We mentioned this last night, that they're very attached to. That's according to their psychophysical nature. So Jamil, we know he had was about 86 years old, and he just had a little baby, or his wife had the baby. And the boy's name was Narayan, and he was chanting Narayan, 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 not meaning God, he was meaning the baby's name, you know, because he was attached. But because he was chanting the name of God unconsciously, therefore the Vishnudutas came and saved him from the Yamadutas. Isn't that, that's great potency of the Lord's holy name. Narayan, Narayan, Narayan. And therefore, he didn't become, it's interesting, he didn't become completely Krishna conscious at that point. He didn't go back to Godhead. So we're going to distinguish between liberation and pure devotional service. There's actually a difference. He got liberated, but he didn't go back to Godhead at that point, later on. Just like we hear many times that if you're a devotee, you liberate your family members. You know, sometimes it's at 10 generations, sometimes 11 generations. But in any case, your family members get liberated by your being a devotee. But it doesn't mean they go back to Godhead. Yeah, I hate to tell you that. But liberation means freedom from the karma. You know, from the vikarma, from the karma, from the parabdha karma, from the kuta, from the bija. But then again, they can take up karmic activities and entangle themselves again. So Jamil, he got liberated. However, after that, he had to go to a holy place and perform devotional service and cultivate bhakti. Then he went back to Godhead. At that point, the same Yamadutas that had come to save him from the Vishnudutas came on the flower airplane after he performed bhakti and took him back to Godhead. So it's very important to understand that, the difference between liberation and pure devotional service. So it's not that chanting Namabash gives you pure devotional service. It gives you liberation. But then again, you can become entangled in this world. So we have to chant the Shuddhanama. In order to chant the Shuddhanama, we have to hear the Shuddhanama from someone who chants it. And that means you have to hear it from the lips, as Prabhupada said, of a pure devotee. If you just hear it from some of these professional bhajan singers, then you will not get pure devotional service. In fact, it may be worse than Namabash, because they may be chanting Nama Aparada. Many of these professional bhajan singers are impersonalists or Mayavadis. In other words, they're chanting with the idea of merging into the Lord. Ajamil was chanting innocently. He was an innocent guy. And I don't know. I know he was sinful, but his chanting was innocent. He wasn't chanting to merge into God. He wasn't chanting to get free from his sinful activities. He wasn't chanting thinking that the name of God and the names of the demigods are equal. He wasn't offending Vaishnavas. He wasn't committing any of the offenses. Whereas many of these professional bhajan singers are committing the offenses. I know that many of them are chanting with the idea of merging into the existence of the Supreme Person. So you hear from them, you don't even get Nama Bhash. You get Nama Parag from them. That's why it says Vaishnava Makod Girnam Bhutam Harikatam Ritam Shravana Naiva Kartavyam Sarpo Chistiyatapayam. You should not hear about Krishna from those who are not pure Vaishnavas, because it's like milk touched by the lips of a serpent, like that. In other words, it has poisonous effect. Milk is nice, but the milk touched by the lips of a serpent, I don't advise you taking. So, therefore, we should be very careful who we hear from. We should hear from Srila Prabhupada and other pure devotees who are following Srila Prabhupada and Srila Prabhupada's line. And actually, many times we find that people with some political motivations are speaking Krishna Katha, and they slip in criticism of ISKCON or Srila Prabhupada, and it affects us in our hearts, because there is a channel between the ear and the heart, and when you hear something impure, it actually affects the heart and contaminates the heart. Or you eat something impure, but that's another subject matter, because the blood carries the consciousness, and then the heart is the seat of the consciousness. So we have to be extremely careful who we hear from, and if we do hear from the pure devotees, then immediately Bhavanti Ritkarna Rasayana Katha Jajoshanadashu Apavarga Vartmani Shraddha Bhakti Nukramishati. In the heart, we get this Shraddha, the faith, Ratir, a taste, and ultimately pure devotional service from hearing nicely. So that's very important. But as far as Namabhash is concerned, we use that also in our Krishna consciousness movement in many different ways. One is the Harinam Sankirtan. We engage people in hearing who don't know about Krishna, who are not committing offenses, and they hear Krishna's names and they get liberated. We also engage that the principle of Namabhash when we call our children or give our children devotee names. Like you may be calling for them to come and eat, and you're actually chanting Hare Krishna at the same time. Like you say, Maruti, Maruti. That's Hanuman, Hanuman, Hanuman. Or Krishna Das, or Radha. It's nice, isn't it? It's nice to give your children devotee names, and also your disciples. So even when I get angry at my disciples, I'm chanting Namabhash. He said, that rascal Balaram. Oh, I'm so angry at Balaram, you know. So that's the principle. You give someone a spiritual name. So we actually use that in our movement, Namabhash. Because we're not actually meaning Krishna. We're meaning some rascal when we're chanting Krishna's names or like that. So Namabhash principle is very important to understand. Nama Aparada is very important to understand. What is an offense? Of course, we have the 10 offenses on chanting. And specifically, the worst offense is the offending Vaishnavas. And there's Bhaktivinoda Thakur in the Harinam Chintamani. He speaks about different ways one offends Vaishnavas, considering their birth, you know, their past, present reactions to past sinful activities, habits they have, and different things like that. You know, we criticize Vaishnavas. Like if you say, here's an American Vaishnav, here's a Fijian Vaishnav, here's a black Vaishnav or a white Vaishnava, that's actually an offense. If you distinguish a Vaishnav according to his background, his or her background, or male or female. I mean, of course, for ordinary purposes, we say Vaishnava, Vaishnavi. But if you think that someone is less of a devotee because they happen to have a different type of a body, then that's a great offense, according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So one has to be very careful to guard against these offenses against Vaishnavas or Vaishnavis. You know, if you think that, I mean, it's like, was it recently there was, oh yeah, there was a big offense in a letter that was written to Back to Godhead, but it wasn't posted. Yeah, hopefully it won't be posted. Yeah, we had this temple that was just opened in Singhatoka. You all know about Singhatoka Temple. And the two nice ladies, they opened up the temple. And somebody wrote a letter. Why in these pictures do we see some ladies' faces and ladies preaching? And they should be Dharma Putneys. You know what a Dharma Putney is? Dharma Putney means a good wife, you know, according to Dharma. They should not be sitting on the Vyasasan like that and preaching Krishna consciousness. They should only be pictures of men or their husbands, of course. So Back to God had got this, you know, heavy letter like that. So basically, that's an offense. Offense against Vaishnavis. Considering that because someone has a different type of body, they're actually not qualified to preach Krishna consciousness. You know, Vaishnavism is actually transcendental to all physical bodily designations. Other activities may not be transcendental. Like you got ritualistic Brahmanism. Obviously, ritualistic Brahmanism has to be performed by ritualistic Brahmins, family, you know, the Gotras, specific Gotra. So I'm not qualified to be a ritualistic Brahmin. Although it does say, that if one is chanting the holy names, it's understood he's performed all the preliminary rituals. But as far as Vaishnavism, anyone, man, woman, child, who knows the science of Krishna can become guru. And if we distinguish between them, that is a great offense. You say, he's a Fijian Vaishnava. We know they always fight. Anyway, or anything, you know, any sort of material designation, or if you criticize a Vaishnava because of some bodily defect, oh, he has a big nose. He couldn't be Krishna conscious, you know. To be Krishna conscious, you have to have all the signs of a, what is it? I forget the Sanskrit word, but there's like different physical signs of a, anyway, I forget exactly the Sanskrit, where your arms have to be a certain length, reach your knees, your eyes have to go out to the ears. Sometimes I thought of going to plastic surgery. You know, getting nice lotus eyes, you know. People would really admire me. Your eyes have to go out to your ears. There's different parts of the body that are either short or long or wide. Like that, and that's the sign of a Mahapurush. That's the word I was looking for. A Mahapurush, a great personality. Of course, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and you also have to look at the signs on the hand. You know, is there a chakra there, or a club, a lotus flower? And then you have to look at the feet, you know. The toe has to be a certain length. Can't have glasses, you know. That's, you know, sometimes people would ask, you know, if he's such a pure devotee, why does he have glasses? It's a bodily defect, right? And why is he losing his hair? You know? Why is he sneezing, you know? Krishna's supposed to protect his devotee. So, obviously, I mean, glasses. I don't know if that's a sign of past karma. Maybe it is. At least when the glasses break, it is. So people do criticize for those reasons. Or, you know, we're not allowed in certain temples in India. At least I'm not. You go to Lord Jagannath's temple and they say, you're just malacha. And that's an offense. It's actually an offense to prohibit Vaishnavas from coming in the temple. Although the devotees don't push their way in, like Haridas Thakur, Sanatana and Rupa Goswami did not go in the Jagannath temple because they respected the culture. Haridas was born in a Muslim family. Rupa and Sanatana were born in a high-class Brahmin family. However, because they had associated with the Muslim Nawab Hussein Shah, they were considered to have been fallen at that point. So they respected. But anyway, it is an offense to see a Vaishnava according to his caste or whatever position he or she is in. Is there any questions or comments? We'll keep it short this morning because we got to get ready. Yeah, Vaishnavi. Yeah, women can preach just as much as men. Not that they could become sannyasis, but we don't want any sannyasinis with dandinis. But, you know, they can preach. I mean, look how what the nice service these two ladies did in Singatoka. None of the men in Fiji has done such a nice service. Isn't it? So that it's beyond the bodily designation. You know, Vaishnavism is transcendental. Yeah, so what do you think? Yeah, about Krishna. We shouldn't hear about Krishna from non-devotees.
Sometimes we find that it's the devotees that say something that really disturbs our spiritual life. Like, for example, that one devotee came and asked a question about some people saying that Prabhupada's books are being changed, and then someone said, Prabhupada's lectures, if you hear that English is not so new, but then we know it's not true, and then we get disturbed.
Yes, yes. But it's a fact that, you know, Prabhupada's English was not perfect. I mean, we can't be blind about it. You know, Prabhupada's English, but that's not the quality of a pure devotee, that he has perfect English. I mean, you can't say because someone can't speak Hindi, you know, but that he's unqualified, because I can't pronounce Hindi properly. That I'm a rascal. So that's a point that's really important to make. We talk about how a devotee knows everything. Yasmin vigate sarvam evam vigatum bhavati. That's a statement. One who knows Krishna knows everything. He knows everything because he knows the purpose of everything. But he may not know all the details. Only Krishna knows all the details. So if people are critical of Prabhupada or critical of any other Vaishnava or finding fault with Vaishnavas, we avoid their association. We don't hear from them. You know, people are politically motivated, let's say preaching Bhagavatam class and have some political motivation while they're doing that, then it may be better not to hear from that particular person. We're interested in hearing from pure devotees of the Lord. Those who are following strictly, I mean, they don't have to be Uttama Adhikaris, but those who are following strictly and are devoid of the propensity to criticize others. So you have to guard against that. And it's But as far as the whole discussion whether Prabhupada's books have been changed, that discussion's on the internet, and there's replies to it that Jayadwaita Maharaj has given. And basically, they brought Prabhupada's books back more closer to what Prabhupada originally spoke, because many of the transcriptions in the Bhagavad Gita and the early books of Prabhupada were misheard by the person who was taking the transcription. You know, so he just didn't know what Prabhupada was saying because he was a new devotee. So Prabhupada would say something and he would hear something else. Because Prabhupada's English pronunciation, it takes a while to understand or adjust to Prabhupada's English translation, pronunciation. So, yeah, we should avoid, use discrimination. But we don't criticize. Yeah. That says, that's the point. If someone just chants Hare Krishna, but is not advanced in Krishna consciousness, we offer obeisances within the mind. And if someone is advancing nicely, at least Majjhimadhikari, we make friendship with such a person. And if someone is on a higher platform, we serve such a person. Yeah, there has to be discrimination. Just be careful. So any other questions or comments? Yes.
As you said, that Gotra, normally in India we have the Gotra means they're born in such a Rishi's family.
Yeah, Rishi family, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But what about the devotees born, they're different part of the world. So how...
They're called the Chuta Gotra. That's what Prabhupada said. That if someone asks what our Gotra is, we say Achuta Gotra. We're in Krishna's family. Achuta is the name of Krishna. And they ask, you know, they ask that all the time. And when you go in temples in India, they ask you your gotra. Did you say Achyuta Gotra? What's your Gotra? Bhadraj. Wow. My basis is. We should go around the room and find out everybody's Gotra. No, we're not going to do that. Wow, that's very auspicious. So way back, many, many, many years ago, the Rishi Bharadraj was in your family, right? Wow.
They calculated in astronomical and my family tree.
No, but have they done the family tree? You know,
they just track it out.
Roots. Yeah. It's called roots. Did you actually find out the roots? Good. You should get a printout of your family tree going all the way back to the Rishis. That's your pedigree. You know what a pedigree is? So a pedigree is like sometimes they have with animals. They give you a piece of paper saying that your pet dog had this mother and father. They call it dam and sire. That's the English word for it. And all the way back to the original dog. But it's better to have a good pedigree. So that's very good. You have a nice pedigree. And you became a devotee.
Maybe that's the reason.
What?
Maybe that's one of the reasons probably I'm trying to.
No, the reason you became a devotee is you got Prabhupada's mercy. Because in Kali Yuga, I hate to tell you this, but anyway, in Kali Yuga, it says that in many Brahmin families, demons are born. So, not that you were a demon, that's not my point. But the pedigree really doesn't matter in Kali Yuga. It's Vaishnava Dharma, Ekon Dharma. In Kali Yuga, there's one Dharma, and that's Vaishnava Dharma. And all of us, Kalo Shudra Sambhavat, we're actually Shudras by birth. Whether you were born in your particular Gotra or my Gotra. Actually, my Gotra is a Brahminical Gotra, too. It is one of the. Is what the family name indicates. It's one of the original tribes from Israel. Pretty good, isn't it? And actually, one of the original people, according to the Bible, was named Jacob in the Bible, and that's my last name. So I have a good Gotra too. See, my name is mentioned in the Bible. Pretty good, isn't it? Not in the Vedas, but in the Bible at least. So, there's different families who are like either priests or have different positions in society. I think in many countries it's like that. The name will indicate, you know, your family heritage or your business, your family business, like Sony or something like that. I appreciate it's Sony, right? Gold merchant. It's a nice Gotra. So, any other questions or comments? Yes.
When we went to India with Ramanuja, then we went to Jagannathpuri. They asked which Gotra. We said Saraswati Gotra. So it's okay.
That's all right, but it's basically a Chuta Gotra. Yeah, it's not really what Prabhupada said. I mean, it's okay to say Saraswati. Because they, when you said Saraswati Gotra, they thought that was a Gotra from the goddess of learning. They didn't understand it meant anything else. You know, Saraswati? Saraswati is the goddess of learning. Goddess of wisdom, right? In the Gurukulas, they worship Saraswati in the morning. So that's all right. I mean, whatever you have to say to get in the temple doesn't really matter. Okay. Oh, another question?
Sometimes we pray to Hanuman to pray to those around.
Yeah.
I'm just not so sure about sometimes you want to say you shouldn't pray to any other. When Shiva is a great person, you say you shouldn't pray to anyone else but Krishna.
Yeah, but we're praying to our spiritual master. Right? So we are praying to Vaishnavas. We pray to Bhakti Sananta Saraswati Thakur. we can pray to any pure devotee. As a pure devotee, if you see them as God, that's another thing. Just like there's one famous religious organization, anyway, the Swami Narayan organization. He's a devotee, but he never said he was God, but they worship him as God, isn't it? That's the weird thing. They worship him as God, but he never said he was God. So you can even pray to Swami Narayan if you want, as a devotee of God, isn't it? Because he's a devotee of God. You can pray to Hanuman, you can pray to Vibhishan, you can pray to Lakshman, you can pray to Sita, you can pray to Radha, you can pray to so many nice personalities. It's not that we only pray to Krishna. Right? But be careful praying to Hanuman, he's a brahmachari. Especially if a lady wants to get married, be a little careful about that. But pray to some nice, good grihastha, like... who's a good grihastha we can pray to? What?
Lord Shiva.
Lord Shiva, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, Lord Shiva. Or Katayani. We have, what's that? Why?
Because he is so renounced.
Oh, he's so renounced, yeah.
He doesn't even provide anything for Parvati.
Poor lady. Prabhupada said he doesn't even buy jewelry for his wife. So, who's that? Oh, yeah, one time we had a devotee in the temple who did this Katayani Vrat. And it was interesting, right after she finished, she was married. So all you ladies, here's the method. Katayani Vrat. But you have to ask for Krishna as a husband. And then that's what the gopis did. No, Hanuman's good. I'm just joking. Hanuman will bless you. He's very kind. Anyone else? Yeah.
Any of these personalities, as soon as we add the title demigod or deva,
yeah,
then we're worshipping them as an administrator. But if we worship Lord Shiva, Indra, or Kali, or anyone as devotees without the title,
yeah,
it's a right way of doing it.
Yeah, as devotees of Krishna. That's right. And it's, you know, it's interesting. I was on a plane in Fiji, and I was sitting next to one Western gentleman who was flying to Lombasa with me, and he was saying, what do Hindus believe in? And I said, I don't know. I said, the Vedas are actually monotheistic, I explained to him. And he said he thought it was polytheistic, you know, because there's all these devas and everything like that. And he said sometimes he asks someone who is a Hindu, is there one God or many gods? And sometimes they say there's one God, but they don't know who it is. It could be this person, that person, 33 million choices. It means 33 million demigods. So, yes, we can pray to the pure devotee demigods. I mean, I wouldn't pray to Indra, because he has a few spiritual problems from time to time. He gets, you know, if you're married, don't let your wife associate with Indra. You'll be in trouble. Like that, go to Maharishi and Ahalya, right? Indra has a little bit of issues. So, and he also tried to kill all the residents of Vrindavan and all those other things. But you can certainly pray to Lord Brahma, Narada Muni, Vyas, any member of our disciplic succession, Ramanujacharya, other disciplic succession. You can pray to Lakshmi, not for wealth, but for pure devotional service. You can pray to any pure devotee of the Lord. Yamaraj. You can pray to Yamaraj, because he's a Mahajan, right? It's nice. Yeah, so don't listen. If the devotees tell you not to pray to anyone but Krishna, that is not our system. In any case, we don't pray directly to Krishna. We go through Krishna's devotees to approach Krishna. Krishna says in the Adi Purana, he says, one who says he is my devotee is not my devotee. But one who says he is a devotee of my devotee is my devotee. That's the point. So, yeah, pray to Hanuman. Tell him about me. Tell him. I'd like his mercy, too. Tell him Maruti would like his mercy. Maruti's been praying for my Hanuman deity. He prays to Hanuman that I'll give him my Hanuman deity, right? It's not going to happen. You're not praying hard enough. I'm praying harder that I keep the deity. Prabhupada gave the example of World War II. He said the Germans were praying for success, and the other party, you know, the Allied forces were praying for success too. And so Prabhupada was jokingly said that God was bewildered, trying to figure out which prayer to listen to, because they were competing prayers, you know, whoever prays harder. And then I gave the example, I don't know if I've given this, told you this story before, but I went to Vrindavan one time. And one of my godbrothers, he had just rejoined the movement, and an unfortunate circumstance. And I was praying, he was about 50 years old, so I went to the desire tree and prayed that he wouldn't have to get married. He could remain brahmachari. He was married in the material world, it just didn't work out. So I went to the desire tree, embraced it, and I prayed, oh, please, let him not get married. And so I said, I just prayed to the desire tree for you. And he said, don't do that, Maharaj. And he ran up to the desire tree and embraced it and prayed the opposite. You know, he held on to it for like a half an hour, you know. And then right after he left India, you know, he was married. So the point is, whose prayer was stronger? He had a stronger desire than I had for him. So it depends on the strength of desire and from your heart and everything like that. So, and also prayer should be done from the heart. We were speaking about this in Fiji, you remember, that like people chant, we chant, or at least in Fiji, they chant every morning the Shikshastika prayers. Nadanam, Najanam, Nasundarim, Kavitamba, Jagadisha, Kamaye. I'm not interested in wealth or beautiful members of the opposite sex or followers or anything like that. All they want is your pure devotional service. So they're saying that externally, but in their heart, they're thinking, I want wealth, I want apsaras, and I want followers. Because I tested the devotees. You were there when I did that? I tested the devotees. I said, look, if I put $1 million in front of you, how would you feel? And their eyes opened wide. And I said, you could have so many servants who would fan you and feed you grapes and everything like that. And they said, wow, sounds attractive. So I said, you want wealth. You want, you know, did I do the beautiful women thing? Yeah, apsaras, I think I said. If you could have a whole bunch of beautiful women taking care of you, you know, fanning you, and you could lie down on the couch and they could feed you like this. Like in the movies, you see the demon sometimes Indian movies, the demons are being fanned by all these girls, right? The peacock fans and everything like that. So they said, you know, they actually, you could see in their faces they were attracted to that. So I said, you're not really chanting with your heart. You're chanting Nadanam Najanam Nasundarim, but your heart is also chanting Dunam Janam Sundarim. So you have to chant with your heart, not simply externally. You have to pray, not simply mouth the words. Whether it's chanting Hare Krishna or it's praying one of the Acharya's prayers, you actually have to feel it with your heart. That I'm not interested, or I don't want to be interested. I am interested right now, you have to think, but I don't want those things. Those things are impediments. But frankly speaking, you have to reveal your mind. Frankly speaking, Krishna, I am interested in those things. That's how you should say it. Honest, yeah. Yeah, but generally we're not so honest with ourselves and with Krishna. All I want is pure devotional service. Well, if all you wanted was pure devotional service, you'd act completely differently than you're acting right now. So, in other words, honest. And then if we want something else, basically it's a strong desire, we can approach Krishna for it. Akama sarva kama moksha kama daradi tu braina bhakti yogani yasheta purushamakaram. Like Dhruva Maharaj. Dhruva Maharaj was completely focused on Krishna's names because his desire, or what he was praying for was completely in sync with his heart. So we should pray in sync with our hearts, and synchronous, or whatever, with our hearts. Anyway, I'm not advising people to pray for something mundane, but at least do something that's from the heart. Pray from the heart. And if you need something for your service, like, you know, like my computer broke down and I was praying, please, Krishna, bring me a new computer. No, not really. I'm just joking. I wouldn't pray that way. But I pray for people's benefit. You know, people come to me and say, you know, pray for my spiritual benefit, I pray for their benefit. But people come to me and they say, pray that I'll make a lot of money in the stock market. Mm-hmm. I don't do that. And they say, please give me your blessings to be successful with my business. If it's prasadam, yes. Like with Nimananda, full blessings. But if it's ordinary business, what? All right, any other questions or comments?
Yeah. Sometimes I do feel, I wanted to just ask you about this one. When we come across some devotees that in practical life, if they are not following the things that the person should be following and things like that,
yeah.
Then we get really disturbed. I get really disturbed.
Why do you get disturbed?
I said, oh, I don't know. Why I get so disturbed? I said, why someone is not doing like this and that, and then for me to come back to a normal, it takes like 1 or 2 hours. I'm thinking about this person. Oh, why he is doing like this wrong things? It is not good.
But that's between him and Krishna.
Yeah.
That's his choice.
Is it an also an offense? Isn't it that I'm doing?
No, it's not an offense, but it's just a waste of time. That why should you get disturbed? If someone is not following, we should feel compassionate towards them and think, how can we help this person come back to the proper standard of devotional service rather than feeling critical in our mind of that person? Yeah. We should actually feel compassionate upon the person. And then not be critical of the person directly to them, but just do what's necessary to bring them back. You can help people become Krishna conscious by attracting them to Krishna rather than pushing them. We pull, we don't push. You understand? Pushing doesn't work. People push in the other direction. Especially in dealing in the family, it's not so good to preach to family members. You know, especially wife shouldn't be preaching to the husband. And, you know, even nowadays, the husband can't preach to the wife either. So, and because people have a need for autonomy, and they need to make their own mind up. I've seen sometimes that the wife preaches to the husband. You know, husband's not as Krishna conscious as the wife, just preaches, you got to do this, you got to do that, you got to do that. And he says, forget it, I'm not becoming Krishna conscious. Just because he doesn't want it. Otherwise, he would be Krishna conscious if the wife wasn't pushing. But it's just, you know, male ego thing. Right? Yeah. Men have egos, women don't. So, but you know, so you have to understand you're dealing with people with a desire to make their own choices in life. And if they're left alone, they'll be more likely to choose Krishna consciousness than if you push them to be Krishna conscious. Mm-hmm. So attract them.
Yeah.
Attract them with Krishna. All right. Any other questions? Yep.
One of the problems I've seen, especially within the married life, devotees don't understand or don't know how to keep the married life on a very balanced platform, rather than, you know, keep going to such an extreme that, you know, after a year or two, you find out your husband or wife is having affairs with someone because, you know, you haven't kept it balanced at the first stage, you know, because the mind, when devotees are really immature, they don't know how to follow regulated principles or, like, keep things balanced, so devotional service is practice, and both parties are on a win-win situation rather than, you know,
Yeah.
Jumping away and then, you know, going to the other extreme.
Yeah, that's true. Actually, the solution is just keep the wife in the kitchen cooking all the time. That's a solution for good marriage. I'm just joking. Don't let her out. You know, just lock the door and have her cook. No. Yeah, you're right. You're right. You actually have to deal with the other person as you would want to be dealt with yourself. You know, that's the golden rule. I don't know if you ever heard the golden rule in the Bible. Do unto others as you would have others do unto you. Yeah. So that rule we should follow in Krishna consciousness. You know, treat your wife or husband as you would want to be treated. And then when you do that, then you have good relationships. You see others equally valuable with yourself or more valuable than yourself. If you're very advanced in Krishna consciousness. So you treat your wife with great respect. I mean, the wife is like Lakshmi, right? Prabhupada said if the wife and husband never argue, I know that's impossible, but if they Prabhupada said if the wife and husband never argue, the goddess of fortune is present in the heart, in the house. Can you imagine that? So you don't have to work then. You don't even have to go to work. You just sit home and don't argue. But every time you argue, husband and wife, the money goes down. Think like that. Then you won't argue. Your bank account goes down every time you get a harsh word. And every time you speak nicely, your bank account goes up. Isn't it? I know, in Kali Yuga it's almost impossible not to argue. Right? But that's what Prabhupada said. Don't argue. And actually, this is the best thing for raising children, too, because if the children see the mother and father argue, they become bewildered. Because then they either take sides or the parents use the kids against each other. You ever see that happen? You know, the parents tell the father tells the son, your mother really out to lunch. And then the kid is all bewildered because his only shelter is the parents. So best thing in household life is somehow or other don't argue. I mean, there can be disagreement, but how it's settled. There's always conflict, but not heavy conflict. There's always conflict in any relationship because there's always two people. And they always have different opinions about different things. But it's how you settle the conflict. We're not against conflicts. We're against the improper settling of conflicts with denigrating each other. You know, denigrating means calling each other names or thinking about each other in a negative way. She's on the phone. Tell him we're having class.
This Gopal Bandhu, he rang last night and he said, Kartika has given birth to a boy. He's on the phone.
No, I'm giving class. I don't mean. I know. Not Kartika is not given. Kartika is a man's name. Men don't give birth. Nartaki. Nartaki is the name.
Fiji.
Fiji, yeah. Nityananda's wife. You know? Yeah, she had a son. Yeah, when I was there, she was getting bigger and bigger and bigger. So it was just... Anyway, it's very nice. So she had a nice son, Vaishnava's son. Okay. Any other questions or comments? I know about the son already. I'm in touch. No other questions or comments? Yeah, Vaishnavi. Yeah, they had to come. Sometimes Prabhupada said they had a little bit more devotional service to execute. And that's why there's a miscarriage sometimes. or they're born and they have to attend a few artis before they go back to Godhead. I mean, look at Srivas Thakur's son. You know the story? Srivas Thakur. Srivas Thakur is Narada Muni. And in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, I always wondered about this. He got married. Narada Muni's gentleman. I mean, I was always thinking, why is this happening? So Narada Muni is generally, well, Naishthiti Brahmachari, he doesn't get married. So, but in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, he got married to this nice lady, Malini, who was a Vaishnavi, obviously. And Lord Chaitanya would have his kirtans in Srivas Thakur's house, Srivasangam. So one time there was a kirtan going on, big kirtan, it was the middle of the night or something like that. And Srivas Thakur's son died. And the women were naturally crying. That happens. So the women were crying, and Srivas Thakur said, why are you crying? And the lady, his wife, said, because your son has passed away. And Srivas Thakur said, don't you understand there's a kirtan going on? I don't want to disturb the kirtan. And if you don't stop crying, I'm going to give you something to really cry about. Yeah, so Srivas Thakur was really a little heavy sometimes, it's described. So his wife sort of kept the tears in. It's like that story in the Ramayana when Lakshman went and his wife Urmila wasn't allowed to cry for 14 years. She just had to, you know, just keep her eyes open or something like that. That's fine. So the child passed away, and then at the end of the kirtan, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, something has happened in this house, something not so nice or auspicious has happened. What's happened? And Srivas Thakur said, just nothing very serious. My son passed away. And then what happened is that Lord Chaitanya went to that room where Srivas Thakur's son's body was, and he said, why have you left? And he touched the body, and the son sat up. He said, many, many lives have I passed in this world, and now I have had your association. So basically, I'm going back to Godhead. Goodbye. So that's it. And so then he went back to Godhead. So we see, you know, sometimes we see the passing away of a child is very sad, of course, but also passing away of older people is sad too. You know, I don't want, when I pass away, I don't want people to think, well, at least he wasn't a child. So, you know, the nature of this world is dukaliyam ashashvatam. It's a miserable place, and children pass away, especially in Kali Yuga, children pass away before their parents sometimes. You know, in other yugas, it was the reverse. The parents would pass away, and then children would live. And young people are dying sometimes from heart condition in their 20s, or even younger than that sometimes. So that's the nature of this world. It's not meant to be a pleasant place. I mean, look at the whole story of the Pandavas, how there was the attempted murders continually on the the five Pandavas, and Kunti had to suffer in so many ways. I mean, having her husband die, and so much suffering was there. Isn't it? The nature of this world is like that. And if we expect any different, that's an unrealistic expectation. Even as devotees. I mean, look at all the things that have happened, you know, to devotees, like even spiritual masters in our movement, like automobile accidents, Srila Tamal Krishna Maharaj, and then Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, cancer, right? I mean, Krishna has his plan, why he's doing things. So we all know that it's Krishna's will. I mean, obviously we're very sad when a Vaishnava passes away or a child passes away or anything like that. But it's Krishna has his plan for that particular individual. And life continues. It's not that we're this body. The child is not his body either. I'm not my body. You're not your body. This is very temporary. It's like a video game that you're playing, and the video game is over at the end of this life, right? Or like a stage performance. Life's a poor player that struts and frets his time upon the stage and then is heard no more. So it's, this is the nature of this world. Things are going to happen. I mean, you don't know. Devotees don't know when they're going to see each other again. You know, they may, this may be the last time you see each other. You don't know what's going to happen. Maybe you'll have an earthquake here too. Right? Or do you have atomic power here? You know, you do. You have nuclear reactors here. No, New Zealand doesn't. No. Okay, so you're safe here. New Zealand is no death, disease, old age.
Death only needs excuse.
Yeah.
It has to have something material to show it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, another thing about the Bhagavad Gita, Kurukshetra, right at the end, the five sleeping sons of Draupadi were killed. I mean, that is so horrendous, if you think about it. I mean, even the Lord's pastimes, there's so many, like, cruel, sad things happen. Like, Lord Ram sends Sita Devi away, then Sita Devi comes back. Lord Ram wants her to vow her chastity. She's insulted. She enters the earth. And poor little Lav and Kush have to grow up without their mother, right? This is the nature of this world. Even when the Lord comes, there's so many heavy things. I mean, look at all, and Kamsa, or as you say in Hindi, Kams. in Fiji they say Kams. But we say Kamsa. So Kamsa killed all the children before Krishna appeared, right? That's pretty heavy too. Can you imagine you're living in a prison house and then each child you have is just like taken, slammed against the wall? Shoo! And Devaki had to experience that. Can you imagine how she felt? Right in front of her. That's heavy, isn't it? You imagine, right? And you know how much love a mother feels for the children. I mean, my mother still cries when she speaks to me. You know, that's very intense. So you take a little baby and you just go, wow. Wow. Imagine that. How Devaki had to suffer, right? And then even after Krishna appeared, she didn't get a chance to enjoy it with him. And Krishna's taken away. Can you imagine that? So, that's the nature of this world. That's the nature of this world. We don't expect, even as devotees, for it to be free from anxiety or free from the miseries. I hate to be negative about it. But however, if there's a positive side. However, if you're internally absorbed in Krishna's lila or pastimes, then all these things will seem to you be just like a television show that's going on. They'll be a little sad, but then once the television show's over, you know. I remember there was one movie my mother saw when I was young. It was called Love Story, something like Romeo and Juliet. And she came home and she was crying and crying and crying after the movie. And I told her, it's not real. What's that? The phone. Confirmed. So in other words, we have to have a real life going on. Otherwise, we will be overly disturbed by these things. Natural sadness is all right. But we have to maintain our composure by having a real life going on inside with Krishna and Krishna's pastimes. That's the real life. Because things will happen. I remember, you know, Prabhupada passed away. It was very sad. I mean, a lot of sad things happened. 1977, Srila Prabhupada passed away from this world, and we were all crying. But then we had to have our internal relationship with Prabhupada developed. Because that relationship can never be taken away. The internal relationship, the internal life of a devotee, you never lose. But these outside things you lose. Your health, everything we lose. Your computer. I mean, I was so attached. I was in Fiji, And this computer just wouldn't boot up. And it was just, my whole life was like falling to pieces, you know, like, right?
It was just, you're about to
start doing seminar. Yeah, I started doing a seminar, and then my computer with all my seminar notes on it. So Dworkin and I and another devotee had to just drive all around Fiji trying to find another computer, and we couldn't find, it was like feeling separation. A moment was like 12 years or more. So we went to all the computer stores in Fiji, and they just had computers that were brain dead there. It's called the Celeron chip, right? And so it's like so much anxiety just from loss of a computer. What to speak if I lost some person I loved or something. Isn't it? I said, my whole life is finished. So see how attachment to that. So basically I started chanting Hare Krishna. I became a little detached after a while. And Dwarka preached to me. He said, Maharaj, just like you change your bodies from lifetime to lifetime, you also change computers. When a computer is old and worn out and useless, you just get a new one. Like one changes clothes. So he preached to me from deep in, enlivened me. Then he organized another body, another computer for me. Yeah, we had five people running around Suva City trying to find a computer, which we couldn't find. And then going to all the computer shops, Dwarka's old friends, who even were drinking liquor or something like that, and trying to get them to donate a computer or something. And they never did. It's been hours and hours. So you see, that attachment is there, even for such a little thing like that. Can you imagine how attached we are to this body or to other things associated with this body or home or this, that? So, I think we have to end because we got a lot to do before we leave. So, thank you very much for listening so nicely. We're going to India.
Wow. Yeah.
Going to India. Actually, we're going to Prabhupada's office first. That's Bombay. And then after that, we go to Vrindavan, Prabhupada's home, Govardhan. And we'll be happy there. And then we'll be back here. What day are we coming back here?
Seventh.
Just for the evening. And then we're leaving early the next day for the Gold Coast. So. Oh, yeah, we should have Damodar real quickly. I forgot about that. Damodar actually. Okay, all glories to Jivanga, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai.